Hey yo, and here we go. It's We Talk Comics. It's the 101st episode. 101. Episode 101. The We Talk Comics scriptment. WTC, all that good stuff. I'm Mo. We got Brad.
Yay.
We got Keith.
Hey.
We got Chris.
I'm not here.
Well, we'll act like it. And we got, like I say, it's the WTC scriptment. Now, we've been off for a while because we've had the WeViews or the WeTalkie Award, the Kryptonite Awards, the one out. We got the Super Summit up, so, you know, that kind of good stuff. So, officially, we're, you know, out of a time loop here and everything like that. But for that reason, we're not going to do any actual news. We're not going to do any actual WeViews this week. We are going to thank our amazing sponsor. Brett, take it away.
All right. It's been so long since we've had a great chance to talk about them. This lovely, lovely website called Comicosity. And I mean, I write some stuff for them. Keith writes some stuff for them. Mo, you even pitched in for a little bit, but I hear that they have some really fantastic articles besides just mine, that is. Keith, do you know anything about those other fantastic articles?
I do. They have a great, incredibly unrecurring column called Read Between the Lines.
Incredibly unrecurring. That should be your autobiography.
That's right. My autobiography will go chapter 1, 3, 4, 5. 11.
Yeah. This is so true. Hey, by the way, either one of you two fine gentlemen want to actually mention the name of this sponsor?
I did. No, yes, didn't. I totally did. Right at the beginning. It's the Comicosity.
Oh, yeah, did you?
Totally did. Do you want me to add .com to that? I could do that.
Yeah, obviously you did it wrong. Oh.
There we go. All yes, right. Run by our good buddies, Matt and Aaron.
HTTP.
Yes.
///
All right, well, Comicosity, still, they rock. And it's my favorite website. I'm generally on it between 15 and 27 times a day, somewhere in that range. It's amazing.
I am on it no less than 34 hours a day, yes.
Well, then you got me. Yeah. Get a life. Anyways, all right, so here we go. Like I say, we've been off for a while as like a regular show. And get sort of a back in the swing of things in the coming weeks in some form or another. But what are you guys being up to?
Reading the stuff that I scored out of Chris's pile of stuff he was selling off when we went to the when we had a table at a comic show a few weeks ago. So enjoying what Chris picked up and put in a box 5 years ago.
I miss that stuff already, man. I can't believe you scooped my Adam Strange.
Oh, there was a moment. So Chris had brought in boxes and boxes of trades. We all, like, I had some stuff. Brett had a bunch of movies. We pooled it all, sold it all to pay for the overhead on the We Talk Comics headquarters mainly. rent for the penthouse has been a bit trying in this economy. So at the end of the day, Chris said, you know, there was a couple of things that if they didn't sell, I was going to take them back. I'm sorry I didn't grab the Adam Strange. And I look around behind me where I had tucked the Adam Strange showcase. Like, well, that hasn't gone far, Chris.
You can have it back after Keith.
And I'm sure by the next time we do one of these sales, Chris, it'll probably be in the box to sell again. So. Yeah. Because I
back and forth.
I'll beat it and then just put it back in the box.
But then I'll be looking at it and I'll be like, yeah, why not? I'll take that.
Is that what is that, like a collection of his original stories or?
Yeah,
it's Strange Adventures, I think it was, reprints of Strange Adventures. And the strange thing is I want to read it, yet I remember not really liking it all that much when I read it the first time.
My experience with almost all the Showcase edition.
Well. What else? Who else has been doing something or any news happened that...
We changed it a little bit more on the website.
Yeah, some more changes and some more coming. Just keep on plugging away at it, you know. Yeah.
What's going on with the world of wrestling, Mo? you also co-host We Talk Wrestling, and I've seen some things on the Twitter about some big changes with WWE doing streaming, or what are they doing?
No, it's what it is they've opened their own network, and originally they had planned to try and get on a cable provider, and they couldn't find one, so they've started a Netflix type service. Okay. And it offers, normally it would have been one of their pay-per-views is $60. They're offering for $10 a month, you have to make a six-month commitment, but for $60 you now get all the pay-per-views, plus all the archives, all their old shows and, you know, past events and everything. So literally, that is like probably one of the three biggest things that have happened in that industry in the last 30 years or so. So it's pretty big, but I mean, unfortunately, it's not available in Canada.
For it to have hit my radar, I knew it had to be a pretty big deal.
Yeah, no, it is a pretty big deal. I mean, a few problems, obviously, and you know, Netflix. I mean, Netflix is great, but I mean, yeah, it could bankrupt them, or it could end up making them the most money they've ever made, which is probably a better chance, because I mean, at $10 a month, people don't even notice they're paying it.
We got to get them to talk to DC, man.
Well, DC does need to do some things to, you know, the idea that they don't have something similar to the Marvel Unlimited app at this point is, I mean, I understood at first because you didn't know what you were getting into. And somebody had to experiment, and you want to watch other guy experiment, and you don't want to necessarily lose the money. At this point in time, we've seen how successful that is for Marvel. I mean, there's absolutely no reason for DC not to do something similar.
Has it been successful, though? Because I'm buying $100 a month DC, and when a Marvel title comes up that I want, I always go, you know what? I think I can wait 3 months until it's on the...
I think you're in the minority there, though, Chris. I mean, I don't really think that a lot of people are saying, I'm going to spend $100 a month on DC and wait. I think most people are going, I'm not going to spend my money on DC as much because I can wait for... I'm going to get what I want on Marvel anyways. I mean, I think you're in the minority there. I mean, it's just a guess, though. I don't know. Does anybody know the numbers there?
There's nothing public on how Unlimited's doing. But, I mean, certainly the sales on Marvel have been strong. There's something weird happening with I don't know whether it's specific to Marvel. It might be with everything. But our friend Chris at Alpha Comics tweeted a photo a couple of weeks ago that really caught my eye. And what he had done was he pulled his copies of Infinity off the shelf, the six-issue miniseries. Mm-hmm. And he said he ordered the same number for each issue. And then he laid them side by side, 1, 2, 3 through 6. And the pile got progressively larger as he went from number 1 to number 6. That, you know, it's a 6-issue mini. I don't remember ever buying like 3 issues of a mini and stopping buying it.
Oh, I have. When it sucks enough, I have.
Well, I didn't read it. I wasn't interested in the Avengers stuff. But it was, but for it to be steps like that, because it didn't die off after one issue. It didn't level out at any point. It was really steps going up to the most remaining of the sixth issue. And I don't know whether people are sampling the first one or two and then leaving it for something like Unlimited or waiting for price drops.
I think that's possible. They say, let me pick up a hard copy. Let me see if I like it. Oh, I like it. I'll wait 6 months now and get the whole thing.
I'll get it in trade. I mean, Marvel's trades are fast.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many reasons that it could be like that. And I'm not really surprised given everything. I mean, miniseries are just like anything else. And it is a giant crossover. I mean... The thing is, I could understand if you were talking about just, you know, like a Daredevil miniseries or something, and if you started to see, like, you know, a 4-issue miniseries that didn't tie into anything else that stepped up like that. But, I mean, you know, Infinity definitely is a big crossover. It's a big part of Marvel, and it's going to tie into a lot of the Avengers stuff. So I could see somebody saying, maybe I don't feel like getting into this.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good point.
I'm actually surprised, Keith, you're not interested in reading Infinity. I mean, the New Universe characters I hear are an integral part of that crossover.
Yeah, but don't they have to be used well to make it interesting for you, Keith?
I really like the first story that he did when he brought in. It was kind of like the pseudo-sequel to New Universal. Warren Ellis's series. And I liked that story. And then immediately he stopped making Star Brand a character and he just makes him a power set. Like I read an issue, I went through an issue and it was like Star Brand did this really important thing at the end. I'm like, I don't even remember him being on the mission until he like saves everything at the end. And I flip back, he didn't have a single line of dialogue until he like saved the day at the end of it. It's kind of what I don't like about Hickman. Hickman is, he's a plot writer. He's not a character writer. I find his characters really thin. He's ideas and plot, but he doesn't move people around.
He has a lot of character, a lot of moving pieces at any given time. I have to agree.
So is it that he's not much for characterization, or just this characterization builds so slowly over such a long period of time that it takes you a while to get to it, and you have to have the patience for it, which I haven't had, admittedly.
I don't think he's a deep writer, but I think the characterization is there if you wait long enough. But sometimes it's a long haul. I find him also very hard to read. Single issues. I fell in love with him when he was on the Fantastic Four and the FF, and of course that was a huge run that I read in a chunk. I found his Avengers stuff unreadable so far, but I have a feeling once I sit down and read the whole thing as a whole, I think I'll really dig it. On Marvel Unlimited.
There should be a Comicosity column on reviewing things on Marvel Unlimited. Just maybe reposting 6 month old reviews.
or what they can do, Keith, is get you to do one, and it'll be ready 6 months later.
Yeah. That's right. That's about my writing speed.
Anyways, that's everything. Nothing big news wise has grabbed anybody's attention. Otherwise, that's been February.
It's been fairly quiet. I mean, we're losing some DC books. We're expecting that.
Stormwatch among them?
Stormwatch among them. Stormwatch is ending in...
How many copies was Stormwatch selling there, Brett?
Stormwatch at about 8,000.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really low. And there's still a couple books close around that number that haven't gone.
Let's bring this up, because I think we were talking about... I can't remember when it was, but recently we were talking about the sales of Larflees. They were worse than... they were closer to what I said. They were very low, aren't they, Brett?
They're low. They're not 8,000 low, but they're low.
Is it about 12 or something?
Yeah, 12.
It's still above the cut point. I mean, DC's cut point is somewhere between 10 and 12 right now.
It's hovering. Buy it, folks. It's freaking hilarious.
There's some books that they've really kept
on life support.
Like Batwing being.
Oh
one
God,
of them.
Yeah.
Like something out there is happening with Batwing. There is some reason that they're keeping this book on the shelf.
It won't help
because the numbers don't make any sense for them to continue to having this book on the shelves, but they are.
Is there anything they can do with Batwing? Is there any character they could put in Batwing to make it go?
I'm wondering if the character's like is going to be licensed out for something. I mean, he would be a great cartoon
character. Oh, absolutely. That's where he belongs. He belongs as a cartoon, but not as a series, because I just don't like. You're never going to find enough fans, like no matter who you make Batwing.
I don't know about that. If you said it in the future and made it, you know, basically Batman Beyond.
Well, Batman Beyond's already going to be appearing in Future's End. Terry McGinnis is introduced to Future's End.
Well, then perfect. Then you can put Terry McGinnis into his Batwing. You're good to go. Terry McGinnis is well enough loved that people would actually watch that.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is with that book. I don't know whether someone very high up just as madly in love with that character. I don't know what it is. Like, something's keeping that book alive. Maybe it does very well over, like, on digital. Who knows? But, I mean, something would have to do exceptionally well on digital to keep those numbers
going. It certainly doesn't show up in the top 10 Comixology anytime, so.
No. Yeah, so I don't know what it is.
Maybe they're just trying to keep their numbers of minority superheroes somewhat realistic. I would love to see a John Stewart Green Lantern book over a Batwing.
I mean, isn't he the lead character in Core right now?
Oh, Core has a bunch of characters, so I never know who's starring in Core.
Because Gardner's not the lead character in Core anymore. He's in Red Lantern.
Kyle Ragnar's in New Guardians.
Right. Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe. I really don't think that would be it. I really doubt that's it, Chris, but who knows? Who knows? I guess that they, I don't know. You never, so, yeah, I mean, it's a corporation. Who knows?
Forever Evil ends in April, and at that point, all of the books catch up to the post-Forever Evil status quo, which will be very, very different for where DC has been for a while. So, yeah, they expect a bunch of new books to launch around May.
Hmm. Well, we'll see.
Think we'll get back up to 52?
I don't know how they're going to count them. Because they're adding two weekly books. And they may keep the number of titles quite a bit lower to offset that number. Because they have, Future's End, which is the one that takes place 5 years in the future, and, Batman Eternal, are weekly books. So, I mean, I've seen some grumbles of people of, I'm being forced at gunpoint to buy, all of these books. But so I do expect that they may drop below. I mean, they've been below 52 titles, monthly titles, for a while. I could see them floating closer to 45-ish to offset that, those weeklies.
All right, well, we better get to the show actual concept here.
I was beginning to forget we had one.
Yeah, it's called the WTC. We're calling it the We Talk Comics Script, basically because there's a lot of scripts out there that were created for movies that never actually hit the air, and they're available. A lot of them are available on the internet. So we each picked a couple and have picked some scenes from them. We're going to read some of the scenes and perform them for you and give you a review of the scripts and kind of tell you what's going on. So it should be fun. There's also a bunch of fan-made ones out there. So if this works and people like it, maybe we'll come back and do some of the fan-made scripts in another show, in a future show. But so what did you pick, Brett?
All right. Well, my two choices were the Green Lantern script by Robert Smigel, the one that was the vehicle for Jack Black as Green Lantern, and then the second one was the Nick Cage Superman Lives by I believe it's William Wisher.
William Wisher, but it's based on direct notes from Nick Cage as to what he wanted for him to return to replay the role after he had already left.
That's right, souped up man himself. Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. So basically, it's awesome. It's basically Nick Cage who wrote it. Yeah, that's gonna be great.
I read the Smith one ages ago, but I never read.
Let me tell you, I've got a lot of sections earmarked because I honestly had a ton of trouble choosing scenes because they're all so good.
Insane.
Yeah, good. Yeah, that's the word.
All right. Well, we'll save that one for the end. Yes, then. Yeah. That'll be our goal.
Let's add at this point for all four of us picked a couple of scripts. The other guys have not seen.
Yes.
Them. So when we're doing our line reading, it is a cold line reading. There's no rehearsal time.
We don't even know which characters we're going to be doing.
We don't even know which characters we're getting assigned.
I showed up to rehearsal, but no one else was there.
Well, you're the only one who's worked in theater. Right. Well, what'd you pick there, Keith?
I have Sam Hamm's script for Watchmen, which was late 80s, I guess it was. 89, 90. Just to open it up here. So I have 1989. Sam Hamm, best known for the script of the original script for Batman, Michael Keaton, Tim Burton Batman. He wrote the good parts of the Tim Burton Batman, meaning he did not make the Joker kill Batman's parents. That was the person that came in and rewrote. But he wrote
Daniel Walters, as we'll hear about.
That's awesome. It is a very, very different take on Watchmen. There's some of the core parts of the book, but it was significantly reduced from the scope of the Watchmen comic. So I picked a segment from the very beginning, a segment almost from the very end, just because it really demonstrates how different the story was.
Now, what's the other book you got, or the other script you got?
The other script I got is 1987. It is by David Webb Peoples. I didn't do any reading on what David Webb has and what Peoples has done. This was a script that was in development, Sergeant Rock, which would have starred Arnold Schwarzenegger, who despite 25 years later still wants to play this character. There was rumors a couple of years ago that he was going to bring this back out of mothballs.
He's okay. Aged into the role now. So
yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking.
He's General Rock now. Like, I mean, he could play the old, he could play the retired version of Sergeant Rock, who then thinks back to, Chris Pine as Sergeant Rock.
And then Chris Pine has to put on some sort of ridiculous Austrian accent.
Oh my God. Did you guys see Escape Plan yet? Mo, you will love it.
Oh.
Chris, that movie was made for you. You must have seen it.
Oh, no. It is amazing to watch just to find the excuses Arnold Schwarzenegger finds not to run in that movie.
Oh, my God. I love that part where he's like, the whole movie, it's like the two of them are, Stallone and Schwarzenegger are going to run, need to escape someplace. Schwarzenegger's like, I'm going to go look at this thing and I'll meet you there. And then Stallone does all the stuff and he turns the corner and there's Schwarzenegger. Hey, I've been waiting for you. Awesome. I didn't like it for the first 20 minutes or so, and then I just imagined that it was a movie from the 1980s where they were wearing old age makeup, and I'd just never seen it before, and it totally worked for me.
Who's older between Schwarzenegger and Stallone?
I think Stallone. They'd be close to the same age.
I think Schwarzenegger looks older.
I don't know. Stallone's not looking too young either. All right, Chris, what'd you grab?
Okay, I grabbed the script that could have saved us from Joel Schumacher's Batman films, Catwoman. This was supposed to be a follow-up to the second Batman film from the 80s.
One of the many things that were, there were so many scripts made that before Schumacher came in.
This was supposed to be directed by Tim Burton himself.
Yeah. Well, this was a spinoff, always considered a spinoff, yeah.
Always considered a spinoff, but...
We still would have got the Schumacher
took over, and they, it's hard to say if this would be an improvement, but it would have saved us from a little bit of it. I also picked a script from one of my favorite filmmakers, Rob Zombie. He imagined a futuristic crow at one point called The Crow 27: Gods and Monsters. And it's an interesting piece. It was going to be his directorial debut.
All right.
But it didn't happen for a variety of reasons, including a DMX version of The Crow.
Okay, I got, I actually picked a couple of Spider-Man things here. Both of mine are Spider-Man, but different takes at different times. First off, I have Spider-Man, an original screenplay that was planned for 1985. It was going to be produced through Canon Films. This went through a lot of stuff, and I'll get into it a little more before I read it, but it's by Ted Newsom and John Bernacco. Brancato, I believe, is actually Brancato. And the other one is I took the James Cameron, the very famous James Cameron scriptment for Spider-Man that he was supposed to do that was is quite famed, and reading of that is what gave me kind of the idea that we should do this as a show back several months ago now. So I have a pair of Spider-Man scripts that are very different from each other. So the question is, who wants to volunteer their script to start this sucker?
I'll volunteer. We can do Green Lantern first.
Okay, let me open it up here.
Yes,
the PDS. Yes. I'm curious about this one because I spent hours and hours and hours researching scripts and verifying that they were actually available and that they were legitimate, that they weren't copies of fan-made ones or some sort of or hoax or whatever. And then afterwards, you guys didn't look at the list I made at all and just went on to do your own thing. So it's okay. It was only hours of my life.
But, which is why it took months.
Yes, one of the reasons. But this one I had heard a lot about. I haven't read it, but I was very curious about it because, Jack Black, Green Lantern, Robert Smigel, R-rated film.
Yep.
Where are we going here?
Well, Oh man, you know the.
I like this inspired by Emerald Dawn 1 and 2, which is probably my favorite Green Lantern stories of all time.
Really, so, I find it the most overrated.
I find it exactly rated.
Green Lantern. Oh wow!
I also find it exactly rated.
So do I. Which is really so. That's really where this script broke down for me then. Because when you talk about it being based on Emerald Dawn, I anticipated some elements of Emerald Dawn actually being in the script.
So it really, well, it says inspired by, so it's really like, is it inspired by any time they ever told you Green Lantern's origin?
Yeah, to a certain degree it is. And
Rhett, tell us what page we're jumping to, and then tell us what's happened up to then, so it makes sense. And in doing so,
all right, that seems so. Anyways, well, basically, we're gonna start to around page 13, but he gets his powers. But the key thing is that here it is, and it's Green Lantern.
Who gets his powers? Well,
yes, the guy's name is Judd Plato. And he's got a buddy named Seth. Now, here's the clincher. Judd is a guy who works at IKEA, basically. And, you know, he's a total, like, stoner, slacker type. Seth is his buddy who thinks Judd is cool. Well, now Judd...
Green Lantern, folks. Judd, Green Lantern.
Judd happens to be on a TV program as well, which is based off of Fear Factor. And I think here's the clincher, is that he eats, like, you know, dead squirrels and, like, you know, wolf-like heads and stuff like that on this TV program. So, therefore, no fear. So, that is what allows him... So, but here's me thinking as I'm reading this, and I'm like, the hell are you doing? You know, like, you know, they're flying through, like, you see the ring flying through over people that are doing, like, truly heroic acts would be, like, a great Green Lantern. Oh, no, a great Green Lantern. No.
But, any of them look like Hal Jordan even, or?
Well, they're, you know, like, we'll get into that to a certain degree. But, okay. But no, so it stops, Abin Sur's ring stops on Judd Plato. And,
great name, Judd Plato.
Yeah, I don't really know where they got that.
I love that in this world, the best person suited for the Green Lantern ring would be Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
So he would get the ring and immediately try to find out who was really behind 9/11.
All right, so on page 13 of the script, who would like to be the voice of the announcer, so to speak, and who would like to be Abin Sur?
I want to be Abin
Sur. All right, Keith could be Abin Sur. Who gets to be the announcer part?
I'll do the screen directions.
Yes. All right, page 13, Mo.
Page 13. Well, where am I starting with here? Not at the top because it's in the middle of a
scene.
Yes,
no, that's fine. Because we all know this part. Okay. He's about to get his powers. I'm not reading the entire scene because one of the things that you'd note about this whole script, if you read it.
Okay, so am I starting at the part here? Is the first line then is the Judd? Oh, here we go. Am I on the right page?
No, I'm talking about the page, which is
the page number 9. Yeah. Okay, in interior spaceship. Moments yes. later, Judd lands on the floor. Across the deck is Abin Sur, still seated by the controls. The ray of green light forming Judd's chair emanates from Abin's ring.
The ring and the battery are all you shall require. Be sober, be vigilant. You are one of us now.
How's that?
I am Abin Sur. I have served the Corps from Space Sector 2814. I am dying.
Wow, that sucks.
You have been chosen to be my successor.
No.
Ring has...
Not happening.
Your wants are not my concern. The ring must be charged at the battery of power at regular intervals. Call for it, and it will appear.
Wait a minute. That costume. This is the green guy. Green Hornet.
Green Lantern.
Wait. You're saying I'm a Green Lantern? Stop it. That's mind-blowing. This is like the eighth most famous superhero.
The Guardians have chosen you through the ring. The ring singled you out for your fearlessness.
No. Are you talking about the Dare Diner? I didn't even win. I finished third. I mean, that's a secret, but you're dying, so I don't think the network will...
The ring knows your potential to overcome fear.
But I can only eat that stuff because I have a dead spot on my tongue. I bit a section off when I was 5. I was at the carnival riding the teacups, and I already had a sugar buzz from the fried...
Please, do not bore me in my final minutes. That's my new catchphrase. Right there. Fear is for you an intellectual exercise. It is a method of self-preservation linked to your species' survival instinct.
Mama.
Man,
Judd's phone rings. Sorry, it's loud.
Sorry, you believe this thing works out here? Verizon.
I love that they already had that in place. That's great.
Abin doesn't react. Judd picks
all right,
it
well,
up.
We're good there. But the key thing is that one of the best parts is that this scene introduces two ongoing, on-running gags for the whole thing. Verizon?
Is Abin Sur just dying through the entire
movie? Actually, that's the way it seems. Because each and every... I actually think the movie is only 3 scenes long. But each scene just happens to be about 20 pages. So, but it introduced... Like, they mentioned Verizon, like, more times than you can count. And they also do... The whole idea of the 8th most famous superhero becomes the 9th most and the 12th most and... Etc. as we move along in the script, so it's.
Now I'm sort of curious. You've read this whole thing,
yes.
Now, could the same script be used with Daredevil with the fear thing?
No, it couldn't be. Primarily, just because of the fact that that later on, I mean, we do need the Green Lantern part. which is good.
I would hope that would at some point.
It thinks that you know how to overcome fear, whereas Daredevil just doesn't have any. Anyways, okay, Brett, what's our next page?
All right, so on page 59. Now, so what has happened now is he's gotten the ring. He is attempting to use the ring to acquire the girl that works at the IKEA with him. And so to do that, he has created... Like, she's scared of mice, and they have mice there, so he creates Green Lantern cats, and then so the cats get the mice, and then what happens is the cats kind of break the walls a little bit, too, and also there's the mouse holes, so he gets one of the cats to become a painter and a carpenter kind of thing, and the cat fixes the wall, and he has the cat with, like, plumber butt. You know, as a gag.
I now want to believe that they killed Hal Jordan just to make sure that this movie would never happen.
We're not even at the best part then. So anyways, afterwards he's finally whisked off to Oa. So we're gonna pick up the script on 59, they've introduced all the characters. So basically,
just assign us. Tell us who's gonna play what,
bro. All right. Well, Chris, why don't you just do the at the end of 59? Why don't you do Tomar Ray?
Okay,
at the bottom.
Yes, very bottom. And Keith, you can do Salak.
Okay, I see where I am now.
And Mo, you continue with the announcer because it's good. That's important.
Just the last line, or are we
just the last line? Just the last line.
You require training and orientation. We located you by tracing your ring's activity.
Oh, all of it?
Cut to flashback. Exterior movie theater day. Judd is in the back of a long ticket buyer's line for a Chronicles of Narnia type movie. He quietly uses the ring to rotate everything on the street but the line itself. Now in front, he turns around and steps into the box office of the Others Online, mostly children. As the Others Online, mostly children are distraught and confused. Flashback, exterior field, day. Judd has continued the original, has conjured the original Beatles with his ring. They perform as saying, "Please, please me," on a green stage. Judd jumps off the stage and grabs John's microphone, taking over lead vocals. Well, it's Jack Black. I guess he wants to sing. Conjured green girls in the audience scream for Judd as the Beatles continue, confused. Judd gratuitously smashes his guitar. I'd like to point out at this point, he could just say conjured girls. He doesn't have to say green every time something's conjured. We get it. We get that the stuff is green.
It's awesome because in this script, if the second that he creates something, he could create it forever. Because we have people watching like green TVs. Like at a later point, he literally, like his girl, he creates, he smashes the TV of this girl that he wants. And so then he recreates a green TV. She's like, "Why is everything green?"
Oh, man. All right. Exterior planet. Wait,
he conjures the Beatles and he conjures the girls. But then when he smashes the guitars, the imaginary Beatles are confused.
Yeah. All right.
We can skip the rest of it. Really, those two lines were.
Oh, I didn't get to say salad.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, no.
That, which is my alternate, my new alternate catchphrase. Salak says, "Disgusted, pistachio nuts."
Ah,
I love it.
Yeah, you know that would almost work if it was the squirrel Green Lantern, but it's Salak.
If it was Chip, pistachio nuts.
Chip. Yeah.
All right, moving on to page 108. This is the longest script ever, by the way. it probably isn't, but so anyways.
I'm guessing it is.
The key thing is that Sinestro runs a tight ship, and you can kind of tell that everybody on his planet is fearful of him. So now, I guess overall, the storyline is that the Chikchiki are looking for the Guardians. That's kind of the backstory of the whole thing. And so at a certain point, our Judd Plato Green Lantern is going to have to face them. Though I may have skipped any and all reference to them simply because they're almost never in the story. So that part really doesn't matter all that much. Anyways, we're going to go on. So from the exterior sky moments later, top of 108.
So who's going to play Sinestro?
Sinestro. Who gets Sinestro?
I want to do Sinestro.
All right, Mo, you can take Sinestro. Keith, you can take the announcer then.
I can do that.
Yes.
I can do the
screen directions. Yes.
All right. Sinestro is reciting at the microphone.
"Dangerous times call for necessary restrictions. I am but one man, but I will do my very best to keep track of all your interpersonal communications. I give you my word."
Suddenly, he is grabbed from behind by a giant green hawk. The source of the beam is Judd's ring.
"No, Plato, what are you doing?"
"You're out of control, Cincy."
"Plato, your will far exceeds your intellect. I'm restoring control."
"Look, man, maybe I can't handle this either. I'll give you that. But you're like 20 Nixons. I'm calling in the other Green Lanterns."
"What?"
Sinestro fights through the hawk and makes it burst apart, blowing Judd backwards. Sinestro fires a series of bullwhips that whack Judd repeatedly.
"Send them back. We don't need more disordered minds with chaotic methods."
Judd is dazed but angry. He rears his ring back to charge at Sinestro.
"I'm not chaotic, Jag."
"But whatever you do, don't think of Elmo Twitty wanking Barbara Walters. What did I just write?"
Dude, that's titty wanking. Okay, get it right.
"Oh, titty wanking. Elmo titty wanking.
What?"
Judd points his ring and fires a green Elmo humping Barbara Walters' chest at Sinestro.
"Damn it!
Let the weak mind step aside."
A giant shoe kicks Judd.
"I'm not weak."
Judd conjures a huge frying pan that slaps Sinestro's head.
"Enough! You're not even a Green Lantern."
This is my ring.
Do you really believe that? That the noble Abin Sur's ring would choose you on its own accord?
What are you babbling?
I've had my eye on this planet for years. The varied life forms, the vegetation, the easily molded masses of simpletons.
What the fuck, Sinestro?
When Abin's ring contacted me for help, that was the opening. I canceled his signal. Then when his ring sought a successor, it was simply a matter of will to redirect it to miss a courageous test pilot and choose an impetuous, weak-minded fool. That's right, Jensi. You were a mistake.
Excellent. That's our scene. And so therefore...
And
yes. See, so that's basically the whole clincher to this. Is that Sinestro caused the ring to choose the wrong person?
Why wasn't this ever made into an Elseworld?
I believe this script was used for a Donald Duck episode, though.
Because of all the F bombs, there's a lot. Didn't you tell me, Brett? I'm a little disappointed. I know you chose these.
But... I've got... Oh, you're talking about the one thing that I've got it coming up again.
The one thing he's about.
Good. Now this last scene... Or...
Are we going to make this a two-part episode? We may have to.
We may have to. Because this alone is taking...
I know. Well, and we
may have to make this a four-part
and
episode.
We talked for years before. But we won't read the next scene. There's this scene that I had chosen that is actually where he conjures up a green Superman. And
is it green?
A green Superman. And then he does the...
He was green?
He says, do the Superman one thing. So, because... Green Lantern can't fly around a planet fast enough to reverse time, but his green Superman can fly around the planet fast enough to reverse time. So that's what he does. He goes around, he has the green Superman pull the Superman 1 thing, and that...
No, I didn't know about that, though. That's awesome.
And that fixes it. Now, just as my last little bit, I'll just read this last little... thing. It's Judd and the Guardians talking. So Judd is saying, you're the one who's not hearing me. You're so stuck in your orderly Jones, you can't even hear yourself. But I'm like the new guy, so I can step back, have a little perspective, and tell you as a friend. Guardian says, there's no comparison between speaking as one has been taught with the abuses of power Sinestro has exercised. We have heard your argument and wish to move on. The Guardian must determine Sinestro's... Shut the fuck up!
The Guardian says that's
what the Guardian says. Yes, the Guardian tells Judd, shut the fuck up. There you go. And
I gotta say, if you ever recast the Superpowers show, Mo gets Sinestro, man. That was awesome. Yeah. That was like straight out of the Super Friends, man. Straight out of the Super Friends.
I know. Awesome. That's why as soon as I saw him, I was like, I want to do
it. And now you know
that quite... honestly, is the only voice of yours I've ever enjoyed.
Yes, Mo, if you could just keep going with the Sinestro, that would be perfect.
Really? Just, all right. My Peter Parker will now sound like Sinestro. No.
So, at any rate, they beat back the Legion character, they beat back the Chick-Chicky, and, of course, he beats Sinestro, and... The one thing that I did forget to mention was that during his training, of course, you got Kilowog. Well, he says, I'm a little tired, Kilowog. Let's go back to Earth. Kilowog then becomes a drunk idiot living on Earth.
So give us your actual review, though.
Wow. Well, again, in comparison to Emerald Dawn, I would give it a -4.
It seems to me like almost a direct translation. Oh, yes. Just it's frightening.
Yes, so very close.
I'm actually not much for these scene-for-scene remakes. I'd like an original story when you're making the movie.
This is the kind of movie that I actually think would be, you know, it might have gotten a little bit of good reaction when you see the script, because I think you could see, like, at the end, you kind of see what they were trying to do with it. As a comic book fan, it's shit. You know, it's a pure bastardization of everything that's good and lovely about Green Lantern. You know, though at the end of the day, it may still have been better than the Ryan Reynolds Green Lantern movie. So, you know, who knows? But I don't think I would have liked it.
Interesting. Interesting. All right, that was an experience. Who wants to do a script?
let's do my Catwoman.
All right. Oh my god. Oh, I hope it's half as entertaining as that was. Chris's Catwoman.
It's not, but it's got a joke for just for you, Mo.
Okay.
Now, as I said before, this script was meant to be a continuation of Batman Returns.
So Michelle Pfeiffer was supposed to star in this.
Yep. And, in true sequel fashion, in the first scene, she gets amnesia and moves to another city. thus negating any sequel obligation. The city she moves to, of course, is a stand-in for Las Vegas, because we all know how Catwoman loves Las Vegas.
When I think Catwoman.
That is run by a pretty evil, but really goody-goody syndicate of superheroes called the Cult of Good.
Oh my god. They have... They didn't decide to stick to anything in comics, huh? This was...
Oh, no. There are several scenes. They that made up superheroes. As we're going to listen in on one of the meetings, one of the many meetings that the Cult of Good have in this movie. Now, Keith, I would like you to read the stage direction.
Okay.
Starting, I don't have the page number, but it's all in the doc.
Mo, I just opened the short version.
Yeah,
I just opened the short version too. Yeah,
Mo, you get to play Captain God.
Hell yeah! His name is Captain God.
I will play Cactus and Spooky, and Brett, you get Adonis. Sorry, there's a lot of names.
Adonis, I think Adonis is.
Sorry, you get Adonis and Spooky. I get Cactus and Mammoth.
Oh, all right. Fair enough.
All right. After a somersault down through the air, a shocked at her own physicality, Selena lands on her feet behind a stack of boxes marked Classified Gadgetry. The tribal sounds of beating drums can be heard, further freaking her out. Selena squeezes through the stacks of boxes toward the drums. She is in the hideout of the Cult of Good. The level behind below Selena and the boxes, the level below Selena and the boxes is decked out with the usual higher tech fact-finding machinery found in a good superhero lair. More to the point, at the center of the hideout is a round table around which stand Captain God, Cactus, Spooky, and Adonis, solemnly beating their own drum. That sounds like a euphemism.
They
stand so Captain God can speak in his abnormally normal voice.
We are the Cult of Good, secretly formed without knowledge of each other's identities. We live to make evil die, to serve mankind by... Yeah, you know the rest.
The superheroes loosen up and kick back around the table.
Boss man, what were you going on about last night? I am the law and I am the Danish?
I don't know what I was saying. I totally phoned it in last night. I haven't been getting a lot of sleep lately.
The crowd bought it.
Crowd always buys it. What do we got?
The shopkeeper on 13th Street won't drop the lawsuit. He still claims one of the lasers we fired at the Jenkins gang burned down his store. I hate innocent bystanders. Wine, wine, wine. When will he settle?
God, can I have tomorrow off? My new cereal is coming out, and they want me to sign boxes over at...
Selena huffs into a half smile down to this... And down to the strange... huffs into a half smile down to the strange conversation below. This would be great if these were the second. I may have some sort of aphasia. call a grown-up. Captain God bellows through his Darth Vader-esque voice box.
Do I have to remind everyone that in 2 days we'll all be dead? The Cult of Good will be a memory. I don't want to hear about lawsuits or serials. We have a secret mission.
I still have to call my agent. My techno single is just made the Hot 100. What's with the phone?
You have to dial 9 first.
Suddenly, an entering roaring mammoth hurls the seen last night eyepatch leader of the robbers onto the table, chained.
Mammoth, bring bad guy. Mammoth, not big and stupid.
Of course not, Mammoth. Sit, Mammoth.
Talk about God, super Chris. Friends-level dialogue,
That's wicked.
I actually hurt myself doing that.
I do not recall the Tim Burton Batman movies being comedies. Pure, straight parody comedies. This isn't... Are you sure you didn't get accidentally one of the failed scripts for Mystery Men? Like,
no. What? I am the law. I am the Danish.
I love the script directions on that one. That was fantastic. It was just like random words strung together.
Oh my god.
No, this was the 1995 script. Daniel Walters also had a script in for the Halle Berry version, which caused some confusion.
Oh. Well, the Halle Berry version didn't have no Selena. So overall, how would you rate the script?
I laughed more. It was a very funny comedy. Definitely a much lighter tone than the Batman Returns. You know what? It's a better script than the final Schumacher movie had.
Well, it didn't have a script.
Well,
Batman Forever didn't have, or Batman and Robin. Batman and Robin didn't actually have a script. They started filming. They did not have a script.
And I was also very curious on what Captain God's costume would be.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great name for a character.
And the cactus.
The cactus.
That, by the way, Captain God, Keith has a new catchphrase, two of them. I have a new nickname for my penis.
Mo, please do not bore me in my final minute.
In my dying minutes, yeah.
Oh, that Stashio is nuts. Tremendous. So, Keith, do you want to go next, or you want me to go next?
How about I go? But I'm going to actually just jump ahead to the second. I pulled two scenes from The Watchmen. Okay. Well, let's just do the second one. So skip ahead to, it'll be page 4 in the doc. Okay, so this is a scene from very near the end of Sam Hamm's Watchmen script. The scene that we were going to do that I decided not to is the opening where the Watchmen try to stop a terrorist attack on the Statue of Liberty, fail, and the Statue of Liberty is destroyed, leading the government to say, we've kind of had enough of these superheroes, they're kind of useless, and passing the law against them. The script includes some bits of the Minutemen, but very little. The focus is really on the Watchmen, who are called Watchmen as a team, which is pointed out to me, it never happens in the comic book.
No, never happened.
They're never called the Watchmen. In this script, they clearly are. They are. Byte is public as kind of the Tony Stark financier, organizer of the Watchmen. He separates himself from them and creates his own thing. It follows a lot of the main story points at that point. Giving people cancer to make it look like Manhattan is killing people, forcing Manhattan off the planet. The relationship between Silk Spectre and Night Owl, all of that occurs. But we come here to the revelation of what Byte's plan is, which is very different than the comic and very different than what was used in the film. In the Zack Snyder film. So, interior information room a moment later, Byte points them over to the monitor at the bottom right-hand corner. On screen, the young John Osterman sits in a lab at Gila Flats, reassembling a watch.
What is this? It looks like John.
It is John. 24 years ago, before he turned into Dr. Manhattan.
Good lord, how'd you get it on tape?
It's not on tape. It's live. We're watching it happen.
Byte, Dryburgh, and Rorschach enter a lab space, which puts the IF room at Gila Flats to shame. In the midst of a massive whirring machinery sits a glowing blue dome, a bubble of pure energy. Inside its shimmering contours is a little corner of Gila Flats. John Osterman tightens a screw and sets the movement of Janie's watch into its brass housing, totally oblivious to the strange trio watching him from 24 years in the future.
Gentlemen, the past, unfolding before your eyes. Stand back from the field. It'll blow you to bits.
What is it? How does it work?
It's a tachyon chamber. It generates subatomic particles which flow backward in time.
Smiling.
There are other words, Daniel. Other timelines, existing parallel to our own.
Adrian, you've lost it.
Pointing at the tachyon bubble. I've seen them. I've seen them in there. In some of them, only a few, the human race survives. And it survives because Dr. Manhattan never existed.
He draws closer to the tachyon bubble. Off to one side is the camera, which feeds the monitor into the video room. Beside it, mounted on a tripod, is a high-powered telescopic rifle.
The creation of Dr. Manhattan was a flashpoint in history. He threw the world balanced totally out of whack. And in his absence, for even a week, screwed it up. Take two!
All right, places, everyone.
Places.
Take it from and his absence.
And his absence, for even a week, virtually guaranteed a catastrophic war. Do you understand now? Do you see what I'm going to do? I'm going to change the past.
Inside the tachyon chamber, John Osterman fits the glass crystal back into place on Janie's watch. White looks on in fascination.
At first, we can only watch the past. Now, we can reach out and touch it.
He steps over to the rifle, peers through the telescopic sight.
It ate up enough water, megawatts, to light the eastern seaboard for a year and a half. But last week, I managed to open a dime-sized hole for almost 3 seconds. In a minute, I'll do it again. And if my aim is true, I'll put a bullet through John Osterman's heart. And Dr. Manhattan will never be born.
Dryberg and Rorschach trade looks of disbelief.
And they call me a fucking nut.
Adrian, it's too late. The world is blowing up as we stand here.
Don't be obtuse, Daniel. If I kill John in the past, none of this will happen. We won't even be here, will we?
And what if you're wrong?
I'm not.
What if you're wrong?
Then I've been a very bad boy and you'll have to spank me. Christ.
I'm willing to bet that was a rejected line from Alan Moore.
I'm doing what I have to save the godforsaken human race.
24 years ago, John Osterman is packing his jeweler's tools, folding his swatch of black velvet. In the present, Blake is raving.
Your problem, Dan, is a lack of vision. We spent all those years chasing after muggers and drug dealers and jaywalkers, as if the world would be any better for it. As if any of it mattered!
You ruthless son of a bitch! You really believe this mad scientist bullshit is going to save the world?
We'd better hope so! It's almost time!
He kicks a floor switch, giant nuclear generators begin to hum, and he bends over the rifle, peers through the sight. In the past, John Osterman is reaching for his lab coat when he hears a squeak. He picks up a broom. A luminescent white spot appears on the surface of the tachyon bubble. There's a hideous whine as a tiny hole begins to open up directly in front of White's rifle. His fingers close around the trigger and a terrible crash. The lab wall collapses behind him. White dives backwards, dodging rubble, as a blue giant, 30 feet tall, steps into the lab, with Lori at his side.
What are you doing, Vedit?
John, get back! You don't understand!
Dr. Manhattan stares down at the tachyon bubble and sees himself, his former self, chasing a mouse out of the IF chamber in Gila Flats. His eyes go wide. Even he's surprised. In the ensuing panic, Dryberg dives at Vite. Vite manages to sidestep him, frantically trying to get his rifle. A hole in the bubble has grown to the size of a quarter. Vite lunges toward the rifle. Lori's directly in his path. He shoves her aside. They grapple. He flings her at the ground and points his stun gun directly at her. A millisecond later, he's aiming at nothing. Dr. Manhattan has instantly teleported Lori across the room, out of his line of fire. Vite looks up in horror, just in time to see a blue bolt of lightning launching itself from Dr. Manhattan's outstretched finger.
No!
Oh! Oh! There's nowhere near that many O's.
Oh! And in the wink of an eye, although that didn't seem like it, he's vaporized. And all that's left is a pair of charred boots still standing upright. Dryberg rushes over to Lori, takes her in his arms. What was he doing?
Trying to change the past. He said it was the only way to save the world.
Dr. Manhattan stares at the tachyon bubble, mesmerized. Inside, the door to the IF chamber has just swung shut on a terrified John Ostrom.
He was right.
Keep going, guys.
He did it. Vedic broke the code. It's so elegant. It's so obvious.
Dr. Manhattan's off in another world as usual, who wears a beatific smile as he watches his own imminent destruction in the tachyon chamber.
John!
Space and time! I finally understand, Lori. I see it all now.
John, for God's sakes, what do you see?
I see the watchmaker made. I see the universe.
He lifts his arms. Particles of light appear from nowhere and whiz around his body like super accelerated fireflies. The lights in the room dim. It's as if Dr. Manhattan is absorbing all the power in the world into his own massive brain.
Okay, first off, before we go any further, I just have to say this is officially my favorite episode we have ever done.
I don't actually want to stop because
I know. Oh my god!
I we could actually read that whole script. I'm sure at some point we could see.
Oh god! I mean, given that and the Superman, I mean, actually, so far there's very few that I really don't want to read
the whole Superman.
So what happens after that is that John steps through or passes through the tachyon, the hole in the past, merges with himself in the past, negating his own existence, and the three heroes are left on our world, where they're surrounded by everyone, and Lori says, "Do you think that they'll accept us?" And Rorschach says, "They better."
Oh my god.
Wow.
This just, you know, people always ask, they say, why is it Alan Moore doesn't want to have anything to do with the movies? If this is his first experience, I don't blame him for just throwing up his hands and going, you know what, since you're going to screw it up anyways. Oh, my.
Oh. I was going to make it shorter, but I couldn't find a spot where it stopped being awesome.
I know. It's hard.
Actually, you know, this is my... As far as good goes, I think this is the best one we've read so far.
Well, I don't know about the smack.
Yeah, but how much does it miss on the...
Yeah, but, I mean, in all honesty, I mean, you want to talk about, like sure, it pisses on the Watchmen to a certain degree, but it doesn't involve a slacker like Dr. Manhattan saying, like, well, fuck you, dude.
Oh, Jack Black is worse. Yeah, like...
Come on over here and give me some quality poon.
Right now, get Jack Black in your head, get in your mind's eye. Now put a trench coat on him, and now they're gonna look up at me and say, "Save us." It's an awesome image, isn't it?
All right, let's move on to my Spider-Man 1985. Now, I got to say, I picked this. It was done by Canon Films. So Canon Films, of course, if you know them, they managed to pick up the rights. I think they paid like $250,000 or something like that, pick up the rights for Spider-Man. And they were excited. And this was going to be it. They were going to turn them in from being a B-movie studio into being an A-level studio. And unfortunately, then they attached names to it like Albert Pyun to direct. which
actually morphed into a movie that exists.
Oh, I know it did.
Wait, what did it turn into?
Cyborg.
Yeah. No way.
Yeah, you combine the script, you combine sets and everything from this project and Masters of the Universe.
Wow.
Yep.
And you get Cyborg.
Well, the thing is that this project, I mean, they've got this property. Like I say, they were extremely excited. They didn't have really the money to pull it off, for one thing. And the producer loved the idea of the Spider-Man character, but didn't know who Spider-Man was. And he thought it was like Spider-Man was like a Wolverine's, like a werewolf curse. So like he would become like so there's a script out, like apparently at one point, like yeah, he's like a werewolf, and another point he actually, when he uses his powers, he actually turns into an 8-foot tarantula. So I'm thinking, I gotta read this thing. By the time I get it, the script that's actually out there for this, they've managed to turn it into a really straight, perfect adaptation of who Spider-Man is. I'm like, where's the craziness? There's no craziness in this thing. No, it was disappointing, but it's fascinating at the same time to see. But yeah, and then when Albert Pyun came on, they changed it again. But so this is written, like I say, by Ted Newsom and John Bernacco. It's based on characters created by Stan Lee, it says. So apparently only Stan Lee created Spider-Man. Yes. Yeah, and first
this would
draft.
This would be before Stan passive aggressively admitted that Ditko had something to do with it.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, November 24th, 1985, the first draft. So in this one, I'm going to play. I'm going to do the character of Rambo and Hogan. Keith, you are going to be. Chris will always be my Peter. Keith, you're going to do every other character, and Brett will do the voiceover.
All right. Okay, I'm every character except Rambo, Peter, and which one?
Hogan.
Hogan, okay.
All right. Beneath the marquee, a dozen large men stand in line. Crowd noise from within. Peter takes a place behind a Rambo type in bandana and fatigues and a goon wearing a narrow burglar mask, striped shirt, and cap.
What for the mask?
I don't want to look stupid.
Yeah, you might lose your scholarship.
Is that a joke?
Peter slowly shakes his head. He glances across the street and spies Lieber's novelties. Toys, jokes, costumes. Interior wrestling arena day. Thump! Rambo flies down on the mat. Hogan pins him. The crowd cheers. Near the ring, a New Wave Amazon official cocks her head at Peter, who wears a rubber fly mask with huge compound eyes and antenna.
You look kind of scrawny for this.
Peter flexes his muscles, none too impressively. She hands him a release form.
Says he won't sue us if he could kill.
Peter signs the release. She reads it and shrugs.
Okay, Mr. Thorkel. I trust you. You got an honest face.
Peter bows. Rambo crawls out of the ring. Peter bounds over the ropes onto the mat. Hogan looks at the fly-masked contestant, then leads the crowd in derision. The large digital one-minute clock buzzes. Peter gestures, come hither with both hands. Hogan grins evilly and roars, lunging across the mat, dwarfing the skinny kid. Peter dodges the blonde giant, leaping and spinning, aside acrobatically. The crowd boos, demanding action.
I do have to say this, since the portion I took this from didn't, but this is because Peter saw that this was a place to win money by taking on Hulk Hogan. It actually said Hulk Hogan. Nice. So this is Hulk Hogan in the ring with him. Go on. Not Randy Savage. That'd be later.
Bonesaw's ready.
All right. Go ahead.
At ringside near the Amazon, Max Reese watches with interest. Reese is a world-weary, balding agent, none too successful, judging from his unpressed suit. Hogan laughs and goes for Peter again. This time he tosses the wrestler hard. He lifts Hogan up over his head and slams him to the mat. Carrying the flailing giant under his arm, Peter scales a ring post. The clock ticks off the last few seconds. He dangles Hogan by his boot toe like a prized trout.
Now tell me you love me.
Let me down, Bookface.
That's not even close.
Peter drops Hogan face first on the mat as the buzzer sounds. The unruly crowd boos and hisses. Ad-lib screams, rip off! Bullshit! It was fixed! Hogan rolls over on the mat in pain, his nose bleeding. Peter leaps down, genuinely concerned. He puts his hand on Hogan's shoulder.
Are you okay?
Get away from me, freak!
Exterior alley day. Still masked. Peter exits the back door, counting $1,000 bills. The door opens again and Rice rushes out, fumbling for a business card.
Kid, you were terrific. Max Rice, novelty act. Was that judo or something? Ah, skip it.
Greatest Asian voice ever.
Question is, can you do it again?
Oh, I don't know, Mr. Reese, but...
Peter reads the business card while Rice sizes him up.
I don't know about the mask. Might want to do something a little... something sexier. Something people don't like bugs.
The door slams open. Hogan strides...
How come your
your agent voice immediately changed from what it was 2 minutes ago, when it was awesome.
That was what the cat did. I don't know. It was like totally, I got lost it your fell, agent. Felt me out of character. I need to do a little I really liked your match, see? And I want you to come work for me, see?
The door slams open. Hogan strides out, bruised and furious. He walks over to Peter. Rice backs off. Hogan lumbers over to Peter. Two ominous beats.
How are you doing, kid?
Oh, look, Mr. Ullman, I'm really sorry about what happened in there, really.
You can be great, kid. But let me just give you a little bit of advice, dude. Let me give you one bit of advice, brother. Be a good guy.
Okay, that isn't actually how they wrote it, but that is how Hogan would have said it.
Right.
Hogan gives Peter a big smile and heads back into the building. Peter heads off and Rice calls after him.
My number's on the card, see? Call me, see?
There you go, now we go. Uh-huh. Alright, moving to the next scene.
We're still going.
Oh, yeah.
Alright, okay. I gotta get ready for this one.
Alright, yeah, you gotta get ready. You're gonna have to be Rice again, Chris is gonna have to continue to be Spider-Man. I guess I'll be Letterman. By the way, that's David Letterman. It didn't say that on the part I took again, but in the script it said, this is David Letterman show he's on.
You got to hold up some cards. I mean, this is 1980s. You got to hold up a couple of index cards and do some of the...
Oh, we're going to need to do some work on here.
Wait, there's more. Do the cards, yeah.
That was a great Sinestro, man.
The AD leads the nervous Spider-Man toward the curtain. Rice watches the monitor, where we see Letterman reading from a card.
But wait, there's more! For arachnid lovers everywhere, here's the amazing Spider-Man. How about a tacit round of applause?
Man, your Letterman is actually very similar to your Norm MacDonald.
Yeah.
It's kind of similar.
Yeah. That's yeah.
Confusing when Letterman interviews Rice.
On stage, as Spider-Man shuffles out from behind the curtain, the tight costume earns him surprised whoops from the audience. Letterman shakes Spidey's hand, then winces at his sticky palm.
Is that bug juice, or are you just glad to see me?
Sorry, I'm still getting the hang of this.
I see. So, Amazing Spider-Man, I'll assume that's not your given name.
Just call me Spidey.
Can I get you a snack? A housefly, maybe?
Thanks, I already ate.
I'll hate myself in the morning for asking. What exactly makes you any more amazing than the average jerk on the street?
Well...
He leaps straight up, somersaulting in midair, and sticks on a Klieg Light lettuce. The audience reacts, suitably impressed. Letterman cocks his head.
Oh boy, must come in handy for changing the light bulbs.
Spider-Man shoots a long strand of webbing to the ceiling above the audience.
And now for my next impression, Errol Flynn.
He swings out over the boggled crowd and clings to a wall. Even Letterman is dumbstruck, leans cross-armed against his desk. Spidey does a horizontal dance.
Hold it, are you a shill for Velcro?
The camera swirled to track Spider-Man as he swings, or as he sings, apparently, back to the stage. Letterman sits on the edge of his desk, shakes his head.
Ta-da!
The band reprises Spidey's ta-da. The audience cheers. Spidey bows.
All right, amazing. Are you quite finished?
Just about. You see, I also have this amazing strength.
With one hand, Spider-Man lifts the desk and Letterman above his head. The audience goes wild. Interior TV studio lobby night. Rice and Spider-Man come out of an elevator, cross the lobby to the door.
So you're airing this tonight?
Yep, and here's your check, minus my commission. Solid, solid novelty act.
Spider-Man puts the check in his waistband. They head into the revolving door.
All right, and that'll be it. Those are long enough. So you can see what they're going for here. They're trying to make this by like guest appearances of stars of the time. They're trying to make it seem like a big mainstream AAA movie. But truthfully, like I say, Cannon Films never could have pulled this off. They never had the budget for it. This is actually a good script. I really, really enjoyed it. I think it was a lot of fun. And it gets a lot of the Spider-Man character actually right in the origin and everything. There's a couple conceits. Liz Allen is the love interest, which you might have been able to get away with in 1985, but you wouldn't certainly by 1990, I don't think. The Spider-Sense is...
far more. It's not just a danger sense. It actually lets him see into the future. So he see events before they happen, like a day or so before they happen, an hour before, that type of thing. So that's a bit of a different. Doc Ock is the villain in this and is just like a slob, like a chain-smoking genius with no social skills, you know. So, there's a few different things, but this was actually fun. It would have made a good movie. I'm really glad they didn't make it because it would have made a bad movie given Cannon's not having the ability. Like, the budget for this thing would be unbelievable, and they never could have pulled it off.
It actually reminded me of Sam Raimi's Spider-Man.
There is a lot of stuff
with the sign-in for the wrestling.
It has a lot of the same feel.
They even had an 80s type wrestler in that movie. So, you know, maybe Hulk is busy that way.
I love it. No, it really is. In fact, the scene where Spider-Man confronts the man who killed his Uncle Ben in the warehouse is almost scene for scene what ends up being in the Sam Raimi. Word for word, moment for moment, everything's almost exactly the same as what ends up in there. So this is kind of interesting from that. So do we call it, or are we having so much fun we keep going but just shorten it a bit?
Well, I can't shorten the Superman, you know, because it's...
Oh, that's
it's
just... right.
I think we have to go to a part two.
I want to do a part two.
We're going to do a part two. I still have another... script. Everybody still has one more script, mm-hmm. And this time we won't blabber on forever about stuff that we don't really know about anyways to start it. Now that we know how long it's going to take, especially this Superman coming up.
We're just going to do the whole sequence.
Yeah.
I hope so. Brett, this is going to be, I'm glad you have a little time to edit this, because it's going to be a bitch, because we now are going to require you realize sound effects. We're going to make it like an actual old-time radio show. This is going to be awesome.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's right.
Right. At least music in the back. Dramatic music. Oh, man, think about how awesome it would be. Sound effects, dramatic music in the background. Me reading Sinestro.
Man, I got a saw if we need some lightning so you can do that.
There you go.
Yeah, because I got
all right, so we'll be back.
Full Foley, man. That's what we need by next time, man.
We'll be back for a part two with this, and we got other good stuff coming on. Keith and Chris are going to do a lot of shows in the future. Me and Brett will be around, but also working on other stuff, so we won't be around as much regularly on this show. So we'll just say that's a slight format change that you'll be seeing coming up. But we'll still be around. Just Keith and Chris are going to be the ones who are driving the ship a little more than me and Brett. You're taking over as showrunners. Are you ready?
Yeah. Yeah, I got some good ideas coming up, actually.
How about you, Keith? You got one?
I have encouraged Chris to have some good ideas.
Oh, that's a boss. Yeah, that's management.
I like to manage down.
I mean, Keith's dealing with a lot. We're living in a week where Lois Lane has her name on a book, and Booster Gold settles for a guest appearance.
A weird week. And I got to say that the Booster Gold appearance is great. But weird.
Excellent.
Booster Gold was in All-Star Western the first time he has appeared in 2014. And next scheduled appearance. Oh, there is no next scheduled appearance. Still waiting.
And Lois Lane has her own book.
Just a special. Awesome. But I think it's awesome that Lois Lane has her own book.
Awesome. All right. Well, Superman's girlfriend?
It's like Superman Presents or something. They put Superman's name on it. But it's a Lois Lane one-shot by Marguerite Bennett, who's up and coming at DC.
All right, let's get out of here. Keith, you're at Cover Reporter K on Twitter. Is that correct?
I am at Cover Reporter K on Twitter, and I want to leave you with one last thought. Please do not bore me in my final minutes.
Captain God. Brett, I understand you're Brett with two T's _ we talk on Twitter.
Quite rather. Pistachio nuts.
Chris, I understand you're Chris, spelled like every other name Chris, _ we talk on Twitter.
Pistachio nuts, you are correct.
And of course, I'm Mo, M-O, no E on my name, _ we talk on Twitter. So you'll notice one of these things is not like the others. One of these things does not belong. And have I said that before?
Only probably every time.
But other than that, we are on iTunes And you can subscribe on the right-hand side. There's a subscribe button on the website as well. You'll get an email alert, so you can reach us both that way. And email us comics at wetalkpodcast.com. Check out our Super Summit show that went up previously, and our awards show. The We Talkies was great, and thanks very much to Comicosity. We are OUT, unless somebody has anything else they want to add.
Pistachio nuts.
Boobies.
No, quality poon. That's the part that I missed.
That's another line.
That was one of the lines from Green Lantern, was calling for quality, more quality poon.
We should have somebody else write the podcast every week.
That's true. We have a new privilege so format. All right, guys, we're done. Good night.